The University of Illinois Radio Service now presents Colonel Paul Armstrong, Director of Illinois Selective Service. Colonel Armstrong came here last week at the invitation of the university to address a mass meeting of students on the present status of the Selective Service. Colonel Armstrong.
It is indeed a happy occasion for me to be able to address this splendid body of students. I have very happy recollections of the University of Illinois since my own daughter graduated from the school 4 years ago. We have a very trying job ahead of us in Selective Service with world conditions the way they are now. And I like to use the story that General Hershey tells of his boyhood over in Indiana when he attended a drama presented at the local theater. The scene is laid in a country jail, and the sheriff is speaking through the bars to the prisoner. He says, "Bill, we've been friends all our lives. We grew up together. We rode the reins together. But now I'm the sheriff, and you've been convicted of horse stealing, so I have to hang. But I want you to know, Bill, it ain't going to have any effect on our friendship. And when I hang you, I'm not going to hurt your feelings any more than I absolutely have to." Now, we don't mean by that our local boards are going to hang any registrant. But they do have to do a job as gently, as politely, and as effectively as they can. They must take the young man out of his community, out of his family, and send him into the armed forces in order to be trained and ready to defend the rights and privileges which are ours under this democratic form of government. Now, we are here talking to this student group. And we can't offer too much hope beyond the present school year, which ends in June, and all deferments that are made to students, with the sole exception of those students who are pre-med students and who have been accepted for the medical college, and the college in turn has placed a Form 103 in their file indicated that they have been accepted as students. Then the other, the reserve ROTC training student who is in the local unit and who has been classified in 1D by virtue of the fact that an NME 44, the official document indicating his membership, has been filed by the commanding officer with the local board. However, members of Congress have been quoted in recent days to the effect that present student policy will have to be revised because of the great need for manpower. They may revise the law so that only those in engineering, various other scientific students, plus the professional students, would be deferred. In other words, those who are in law school, liberal arts, commerce, agriculture, all such schools would probably be made available to the military force. President Conant of the University of Harvard has recently been quoting as saying that under present conditions, it may be necessary to take all students, all young men, for a 2-year period of training. And he feels, and most of us feel, that the obligation of service to the nation is the same. Matters not just what your position may be. Whether you pump gas in the local station, whether you work in an office or a factory or on the farm, that in time of stress and in time of need, that every citizen has the same obligation of service to the nation. Now, we're presently operating under the 1948 Act as amended and extended in 1950. There are available to us only those age groups 19 through 25, and only those men in that age group that are single, non-veterans, and physically qualified for military service. Obviously, there are not too many when you consider that on the 24th of November, a statement was made in Washington by the Department of Defense to the effect that we were planning a 3 million fighting force. And they stated then that there were 9 million in the manpower pool between 19 and 26. Now in the armed forces, there are 1,700,000, approximately 22.5 years old on the average. Remaining pool of draft-age civilians, 7,300,000. The veterans in this group who are draft-exempt under the present law number 3,500,000. That leaves a non-veteran pool of 3,800,000. We have to subtract from that those with dependents who are not presently being inducted in the number of 1,000,000, and those not up to the present physical standards acceptable to the armed forces, 1,100,000, which leaves available, including students, scientists, skilled workers, and farmers, and possibly some of those that are in organized reserve units of the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, and National Guard, in the number of 1,700,000. The men needed from this non-veteran group to fill out a 3-million-man force, 1,300,000. Obviously, with a cushion of within in force, 1,300,000. Obviously, with a cushion of 400,000 in the nation, into which must be placed all of these that I have mentioned, students, scientists, skilled workers, and farmers, not very many can be deferred. So, obviously, if, as is now indicated, we go to 3.5, 4 million, or maybe even more, 4 million, or maybe even more, it will be necessary for the Congress to revise the law and make more men available for military service. Dependents may be made available by executive order. There is presently on the statute book a provision to pay allowances to those who have dependents and who are taken into military service. However, until an executive order is issued, we are not presently taking men with dependents for military service. I think that everyone will agree that with the world situation such as it is, our army in Korea being driven back by the Chinese communists and their continuance as an army, as individuals, threaten that we must build up the forces of the nation and be ready for whatever may occur. We don't know whether we are heading into World War III or not. God grant that we may not be. But in any event, this nation must remain strong.
Now, Colonel Armstrong, there are several questions submitted by university students attending the mass meeting, which it might be well to answer at this time. Assisting Colonel Armstrong in answering the questions will be Major Robert Turnbull, Chief of the Manpower Division of the Illinois State Headquarters. Now, the first question, which probably bothers a lot of these young men, Colonel Armstrong, is, will the services draft the 18- and the 19-year-old men?
Under present law, the 18-year-old cannot be taken. He must register, but he cannot be classified or inducted. It is assumed that if Congress does change the law, that they may decide to go down into the 18-year-old group. The 19-year-old group are presently liable under this act.
Well, now, Major Turnbull, what is the situation regarding aliens? How do they stand in the draft?
It depends entirely how an alien student enters the country. If his visa is under Section 4E of the Immigration Act of 1924, then he is not required to register. Those who entered under Section 4C of the Immigration Act are those who entered under any of the quota systems or Displaced Persons Acts are all subject to all of the provisions of the Selective Service Law and may be inducted as their turn comes.
Well, now, Colonel Armstrong, there are several of these students who are interested in OCS. There's a question from a graduate engineer who wants to know what his chances are of getting into OCS if he has already had his draft physical.
I would say that his chances of getting into OCS are excellent. As a matter of fact, there is such a shortage of junior officers in the Army at the present time that they are setting up OCS schools very frequently. And any man who has a college education and has the physical qualifications has an excellent chance of gaining a commission.
Well, what is the status of a pre-ministerial student in the draft? Major Turnbull.
Any pre-theological student is eligible for a Class 4D classification as a theological student if he has been accepted for admission by any of the recognized theological schools.
Now, Colonel Armstrong, here's one student who, because of illness, has recently been reduced to a part-time standing as a student. Now, what is his status? Is he still deferred until the end of the school year?
No, unfortunately not. When he goes on a part-time basis, he then becomes available for draft under the Selective Service Law.
Here's one that seems very important to me, Colonel Armstrong. What about a situation where a boy's brother has been killed in the Korean crisis, and this boy is the only surviving son? Can he be reclassified?
Under the present law, it is provided that a sole surviving son, one who has lost one or more brothers in action or as a result of enemy action during World War II, is automatically deferred or deferred. However, so far as Korea is concerned, it would become necessary for the Congress to amend the law to include anyone under the same condition as the World War II sole surviving son that might be created as a result of Korean action.
Well, now, Major Turnbull, as a reserve officer myself, this one kind of interests me. What is the status at present of the active and inactive reserves?
Under the present conditions, we've got to consider whether or not the man is a commissioned officer or a warrant officer or an enlisted man in the reserves. Any commissioned officer or warrant officer may be either a Class 1D or Class 1A, depending on circumstances. However, in either case, in the case they are placed in Class 1A, under the present provisions of the regulations, they will not be ordered for physical examination nor induction. In case of the enlisted man, if he is a member of an organized unit and regularly attends all drills, he may also be either in Class 1D deferred or in Class 1A. And as the same as the officers, he will not be ordered for physical examination or induction. The inactive reserves, unless they have qualified for certain under certain provisions of the regulations for a 1D, they may and are subject to examination and induction regardless of their inactive reserve status.
Well, now, I don't know just what the intentions of this next student are, but Colonel Armstrong, he says, what is the penalty for failure to obey the draft law?
Well, I'm glad to get that kind of a question. I wonder if the young man who proposed this question may have a guilty conscience. I hope that he doesn't have. The penalty is either 5 years or in prison or $5,000 or both.
Well, now, Colonel Armstrong, is there any way to find out from the local board approximately when the student will be notified to take his physical?
Well, he can ask the Selective Service local board clerk. She can make a fairly accurate estimate as to when he may be called for physical examination.
Major Turnbull, are the students accepted in medical school? This may have been answered in part. Are the students accepted in medical school in this country exempt from the draft? How about osteopathy school, and how about students who are accepted in a foreign medical school?
Students studying to be osteopaths in any of the recognized schools are subject to the same provisions of the professional medical and dental students, and they are entitled to receive Form 103 and therefore will be reclassified into Class 2A. In the case of students in foreign medical schools, there is no provision for deferment for them except in the cases of the recognized medical schools in Canada. All of the other foreign schools will be treated just as regular students under the regular student provisions.
I might interject this thought, Bob. You didn't cover the veterinary students. They also are included under the law. Is that not so?
That is correct. The medical, dental, osteopathy, and veterinarian students are all considered under the same provisions of the Act.